Hi, this is Hugh Greenwood from the North Melbourne Footy Club, and you're listening to another episode of the Hashtag Kangaroos podcast. Here is your host, Dean Basich.
Welcome to another episode. My name is Dean Basich. You can find me on X at Hashtag Kangas, Instagram, Hashtag Kangaroos podcast, TikTok, Hashtag Kangaroos 1. So finally, I've been able to track down the ravishing one, Ricky Mangides, to go through a bit of a season preview, talk a little bit about Northball, what's going on at the shinbone.com. It's been coming for a while. He's obviously been a very busy man with work and doing the shinbone.com articles as well. So yeah, it was finally good to get him on. We talked a lot about individual players, positions of players. There was a lot to go through. It was a good interview. I'm sure you lovely listeners will enjoy it. He's a very knowledgeable man, Ricky. So let's not waste any more of your valuable time. Bring on the ravishing run. So today, welcome to the show, the ravishing one, Rick Mangides. Now, Ricky, it's been a while since I had you on. I've been in constant contact with your manager, trying to work something out. And here we are. We may as well start where we usually start. And what is happening on the shinboner.com this year, Ricky?
Yes, it's been a big summer with work commitments, but that's boring stuff. So, yeah, the shinboner is back again for another year. Thanks for having me on. You know, we'll always have the same, you know, the North match analysis pieces and the extra pieces as normal, which is that's never going anywhere. So extra focus this year is kind of going to be about midfield rotations and how that sort of influences all the different areas of the field, whether, you know, people come in first string minutes, second string minutes, combinations around centre bounces and stoppages and all that sort of stuff. So some stuff planned that'll trickle out throughout the year and as is kind of an ongoing series, not only for North, but for all 18 clubs is the plan. So I'm really excited to see how that turns out and might teach myself a few things as I'm looking for different combinations through every team's midfield. So I'm looking forward to that. So it's same sort of pricing structure and people don't have to sign up to see the base things, but if they want extra features, it's all available on patreon.com/theshinboner.
Have you finished all the teams just on that with the season previews?
I called it the look ahead. I didn't really want to make it sort of the traditional season previews that we tend to see elsewhere. It was more sort of here's the two or three topics that I think are interesting to watch out for a certain team this year, whether it's sort of players out of contract or a list demographics, which then if you look at a list demographic, you look at, oh, geez, there's, you know, one team, they might have key forwards who are all 30 plus, so they need to find someone younger as a matter of interest. And then there's kind of style changes. So use Carlton as an example, where their run in the back half of last year came heavily from stoppages, but their turnover game didn't really go with that. They were still kind of lower than mid-table, and history tells us that that's the run they went on the back half of the year. No team has ever done that over a full season. So can they be the first team ever to have that kind of stoppage dominance for a full year, or can they increase their turnover game and all that sort of stuff amongst all 18 teams? So, yeah, it's a nice little way to sort of set the tone for the season rather than, you know, it's a big year for X, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, pretty much what I talk about. It's a big year for all our players. So. Yeah, no, very good. Well, and you are supporting one of your own, and it really is a small price to pay to become a more educated supporter. There are different options, like you said. Just get the $10 a month one, nice and cheap. Don't stuff around. Unless you want to listen to Dribble from Kane Corns or get in X Wars or Twitter Wars and waste time with Essendon supporters, then get on board. Ricky just asked for one simple thing, and that's to keep the noise down while he shows what a real sexy article looks like. Isn't that right, Ricky?
Sure. Let's go with that. I've never heard an article called sexy before, but yeah, why not?
Simply ravishing. If we play against a team and we have a good win, can you name the article Simply Ravishing, Ricky?
Well, I mean, if there's more of the play that we saw against Collingwood in that match, Sim, I think that description will take care of itself if they manage to transfer that into a game for points, hey?
You heard it here first. So now I want to talk about our list, and because I predominantly think that most of our listeners would be North supporters. And we have lost a lot of experience, Ricky. 1,300 games this off-season. We are the youngest and most experienced team in the competition. What, based on your projections, does that usually mean for a team who are that young and don't have the AFL exposure?
I think with any young team and or any inexperienced team, because I mean, you look at it through ages, and then you can also look at it through games played. And I mean, you look at someone like, for example, like Toby Pink, who's I think turning 20. I'm just as I load our list demographic, probably hear my scrolling. But yes, he turns 26 during the year. Yeah, he's not young age, but yeah, obviously he's young from a AFL experience point of view. So I mean, the younger you get, whether it's age or AFL experience, you're going to get more fluctuations. There'll be quarters where things look great, and then the very next quarter, it could be like, hang on, are these the same 22 guys that were playing half an hour ago? So there's just going to be so many fluctuations, and I think that puts a lot of pressure on that small experience core to lead the way, and also the coaches as well to sort of establish those good habits. And from the outside looking in, it looks like a few of those younger guys are sort of those rare arrivals where they can set tone straight away, but you still need the experienced guys and the coaches to help lead that way. So I think to that end, we'll see some of the teams during the year, there'll probably be a couple more of the more experienced guys playing, even though maybe on form they're not quite best 22, but in the heat of the moment on field, I think you need those experienced guys to sort of help lead the way and be sort of that safe head and wise head for the younger guys who haven't experienced what the older guys have.
So you're probably talking about players like Liam Shields, Hugh Greenwood, players like that, Ilk?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, I can't imagine even Shields himself is expecting to play 20 plus games, right? But yeah, so I think there'll be times where those two play. I mean, by the looks of it, it feels like Greenwood's kind of almost going to be potentially like a pseudo second ruck, tall forward, but not technically a tall forward type of role. So, and then also it, depending on what the midfield rotations look like, he'll play games, and Shields as well with the wings. Given Bailey Scott's had interrupted preseason and the other wings kind of up for grabs, considering Stevens has taken one and been solid in his first preseason. So wouldn't be surprised to see Shields play early and then obviously sort of, manage his body throughout the year to make sure he can get to the end of it.
I mean, he did play on the wing in the practice match, and he played a lot of game time against Collingwood last week, I believe it was. Which teams are in prime position, you feel, this year to really challenge for the top four and a premiership based on what we've been talking about?
So top four team this year, with the caveat that we still have eight more preseason games to sort of tweak things. My top four in no particular order at the moment is Collingwood, Brisbane, Sydney, Giants.
Wow.
I'm very high on Sydney. I think they've recruited well to fix their issues from last year, and surely they don't have the same sort of injury run where everyone in one position goes down at once. Mm. I think the difference between the Giants and Carlton, they're both sort of similar in terms of the last year and in terms of the way they surged in the back half of the year. I just like the Giants' process as a more repeatable one week after week than Carlton's, which is why I'm still high on the Giants and a little bit questionable about Carlton until they show me they've changed. And I think Collingwood and Brisbane are pretty self-explanatory at this point.
Melbourne are probably a bit down now with Angus Brayshaw retiring. Obviously, there's a lot of doubt with Clayton Oliver and his future and what's going on there. Are you a bit down on him?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they've lost a lot of their depth. It's kind of been like a gradual erosion over the last couple of years. So, I mean, their top-end talent is still probably the envy of 17 other teams, I reckon. They're sort of best 8 to 10 players. But they just don't have much of proven depth behind them. I like a bunch of their kids. It's just that kind of contrast between, well, can those kids compete now and offer something now for a team that has design on finishing top four and being premiership contenders, and then obviously you get into the forward line, right? And it's just, half the forward line's injured at the moment, and we saw what issues they had all throughout last year. So I think their top-end talent is way too good to drop too far unless they have a lot of early injuries, and then kind of the bottom drops out of it. But at the moment, yeah, I just don't have them in that in the top tier. I'd have them in this, that second tier, that sort of 5 to 8 range.
That's fair enough. Well, we'll get into something that is not so ravishing, and that's Taron Thomas. We're going to talk about North Ball in a minute, and we won't get into details of what Taron Thomas has done because that has been done to death. But from a football perspective, and with this new fast-tempo handball style type of football, he would have been very handy from a football perspective, wouldn't he, Ricky, this year?
Yeah, absolutely would have been. Purely from a football point of view, which isn't too to downplay or diminish what he's done off field, what he's allegedly done off field. It would have been really valuable. He could have been the 1B to Luke Davis Uniacke's 1A, and obviously with Wardlaw and co and Simpkin and Powell and co buzzing around them. So, that's all secondary really. So he's gone, and I think the club gave him every possible chance to fix his behavioural. Issues, and he didn't. So, onwards.
Yeah, that's all we can do, I guess. So I just wanted to bring that up based on that. Well, let's talk about it, North Ball. You did an article about it after the Collingwood game. For those who haven't read it, what do you like about this brand of football?
Oh, to be honest, it's just more, I think over the last, however many years, it's kind of been, we've all been watching and thought, what's the goal here? what are we trying to do, right? How are we trying to move the ball? I don't want to harken back to the noble years and how that ended with just a team that was literally playing a style that was decades old offensively. But that's the most fun part, just seeing that run and carry over out of the back half and loading, I guess you could almost call it overloading the halfbacks with that run and carry when you have McKercher and Fisher and Sheasel. It's extremely attacking, isn't it? So to see that run, the carry, the overlap, the bounce as a way to basically get out of your back half as quickly as possible, that's going to be really exciting. And I mean, as the cliche goes, you build from the back, but when people say build from the back, they normally talk about actual defensive aspects. It feels like North have kind of flipped that a bit, and they've built from the back with their offensive tools and then gone from there. So I think as a starting point, again, from the outside watching, to see what a team wants to do in game one, well, not even game one, a match simulation is great, because then you can see how it builds and how they react to what teams throw at them and then adapt and get better again. So, the bounce, the carry, and just a clear idea of what they want to do and how they want to move is really exciting.
Do you think this can be sustainable throughout the year, Ricky? Is it a worry players might get injuries by doing more sprinting and running? Do you think it could be susceptible to soft tissue injuries or anything like that?
Oh, I mean, I think with such a young team, regardless of what style you play, it's not going to be fully sustainable for a whole year. You're going to have your ups and downs, whether it's a style like this or it's a style that's more kick mark or a style that's more contested or versus uncontested. I think you're going to have your ups and downs regardless. So, if I was the one talking about injuries and how to manage that, I'm far from an expert on that. But I think such a young team, you're always going to have your ups and downs. But hey, as long as you can figure out what they're trying to do and see that, I think that's half the battle.
Now, you mentioned this in the article. What can be the negatives from playing a run-and-gun style of football?
I think you can almost move too quickly at times. The quicker you move, let's say hypothetically you're moving it too quickly, it actually hurts you. It hurts you in two ways. One is that your forwards and your mids ahead of the ball can't get set up in time to provide options, and a lot of that means you're kind of running into dead ends. You can get out of the back end really quickly. You get to sort of 60, 70 out from your defensive goal when you look up, and because you've got there so quickly, there's no mids, there's no leads, and it's like, oh, hang on, and it's like almost a brick wall, and then you hit it, you get tackled, ball turns over, and then it bounces back over your head. And then the second part of it is if you move too quickly, which this part is a lesser priority at this stage when you're trying to bed down your offensive philosophy, is that if you move too quick, it's harder to set up behind the ball. So if you do turn it over, you've got no protection behind the ball, and we know the way the game is now, it's it's such a turnover-based game, and scoring from turnovers normally makes up roughly sort of 60 to 65% of a team's score, so you know, nearly two-thirds. And if you're moving too quick and you can't get set up behind it, you're leaving yourself open to a lot of turnovers. So some teams go the complete opposite way and move it so slow that they're perfectly set up behind the ball, but they can't attack as well as a result. But I think Jed Adcock actually might have said it in his post-match presser after the Collingwood game that they were moving it too quick to start off with. And then they found a better balance. So, that's going to be part of the learning process. There'll be games where they move it too quick, and then it's almost like the bowler in cricket overcompensating and going from too short to too full, and then they might follow it up by being a little bit too slow. And then I think as the year goes on, it's going to be about finding that balance between moving up quick enough to really threaten defenders, but then also getting that right sort of pace in the play to have options up the field and then being set up behind the ball as well.
Yeah, Jed Adcock did mention that particularly in the first quarter, I think it was 40 to 28, that we're probably moving a little too fast. I did see a Nick Larkey turnover. It was quite early, and it left us pretty vulnerable. And I think I had four Collingwood players going through the middle of the ground, and I think it was only Harry Sheasel there, who was effectively a witch's hat against four other players. So it can, yeah, if you do turn it over, it can leave you a bit open in the back part. And I guess, like you mentioned, it's just about getting that balance right, when to go too hard and when to sort of go a bit slower. Now, I want to talk to you about positions and players. We had a quote a couple of weeks ago from Lee Adams saying that Callum Dawson is our number one defender. We just have to fill the other two key spots defensively. Is that a little strange to submit a player that only played one game last year, albeit in round 23 against Gold Coast?
Not particularly. I mean, we all know if Griffin Logue was available, he'd be number one, you know. So obviously, what's he out for the first half of the year, I think. But I've actually been really impressed by the two times I've seen him this year in the intra-club, and particularly against Collingwood. Just being able to get to the ground and watch him in person, obviously you see a lot more that you can't see on a stream. I've actually been really impressed with him. Whether number one defender means he actually takes the best forward or is more just the first defender penciled in is probably a matter for discussion, and probably changes week to week depending on the matchups you've got. But I'm really impressed. Closing speed was good. Was able to read the ball well. Is keen to get involved offensively as well, and can kick it a long way. Whether the precision of the kicking probably needs a little bit of work, but the fact that he's keen to get involved offensively and looks solid defensively is it's a good start. Obviously, he's much like, you know, 85% of the list is that he's going to have those rookie errors because he's only played a handful of games. But I've been really impressed with him.
It's so high. And it's probably a fair comment by Lee Adams as well. Now, besides Aiden Corr, it's a very inexperienced key defensive post. You did mention Toby Pinkin. He is turning 26 this year, but doesn't have the AFL experience. Logue is out at least half a year, you'd have to think. Are you concerned about the key defensive posts, like a lot of people seem to be?
I mean, you can't just bury your head in the sand and think that's going to be, you know, the best line of the field, right? I mean, reality dictates that you've got, you know, Dawson, who's played a couple of games, Pink, who's played zero, Comben, who's played zero as a defender, and Nguyen, who's played one, potentially two at the Tigers. No AFL team has gone into a season with that sort of key defensive profile in terms of experience and turned around and been really good. So I think it's completely fair to be worried. What will sort of determine how well or how poorly they go is just the team structure around them and further up the field. I mean, to an extent, it doesn't really matter what defenders you have if the ball is coming in at a rate of knots, right? So we've seen it in the last few years from time to time, and more often than we would have liked, right? It doesn't really matter who's there. We could have had, you know, prime Silvani, prime Scarlett, prime McMartin, whatever, and it wouldn't have mattered. The ball's coming in with such speed and such space. So the team defense is going to be really important. And then as the season goes on, you know, hopefully Dawson plays, you know, 15 plus, and then Logue gets back and plays, you know, the back end of the year. Hopefully he gets, you know, maybe 10 games, 12 games in. And then Combine can stay fit and the club goes from there.
Well, I've really liked Toby Pink in the pre-season, intra-club matches and the game against Collingwood. I'd say he's probably got the second defensive post. Who would you pick? We haven't seen Aiden Corr, and he's, you know, the season is approaching, so they keep saying he's not far away, but we still haven't seen him. Charlie Combin, there's always injury history there. He missed the last game with a foot complaint or something like that. So if you had to pick one of those two to fill the other key post, or maybe a big Inyorn, if you're happy with him as a third one, who would you go with for the, let's say, the first two rounds in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, as we talk, probably you're probably what, a day or two away from seeing the squads for the St Kilda match. But I mean, I think if you look at it as a whole, there's normally a back seven, team pick a back seven in their 22. So you have obviously Sheasel, Fisher, McKercher as three of them, and I would hope McDonald is fit and able to run out of game, but that's also a big if alongside Corr, right? So if you go back and have those three smalls that I mentioned before, and then Dawson is four, then you're kind of relying on fitness. And I mean, if Corr and McDonald are both fit to play, I reckon you probably play both of them. And then I think Pink probably has to play out of that. So you're kind of left. Let's pretend for a second that Corr and McDonald are fit. You have Corr, Pink, Dawson as your three, and then McDonald as your medium. And then Sheasel, Fisher and McKercher to round it out. So I think if McDonald doesn't play, I think Godo will take that spot as the medium based on how they've been playing him throughout the preseason. And then if Corr doesn't play, I think judging by Nuon's played and Combin hasn't. So just purely based on fitness, I think Nuon would have the edge.
Fair enough. Now you did mention earlier Bailey Scott will be probably playing rebound and defence. He has been doing that in intra-club matches. He obviously missed last week. He's another player in the mix for that rebounding defender, along with Zach Fisher, Harry Sheasel and Colin McKercher.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see what that wing spot that, so obviously Stevens has locked down one, and then that second wing spot to be almost opened up to the halfbacks as well, if Scott is fit. And then so obviously Scott will be that starting winger. And then obviously when he has a rest, you rotate Fisher through there if you want, you can rotate Sheasel through there, McKercher, and then obviously Scott can drop back to half back. So that kind of, it's almost, when I said it's back seven in a 22, you can almost make it 7.5, and that extra half is the wing spot. Because I mean, that's where Scott's best suited as a winger, right? So unless there's sort of injuries elsewhere to open things up, but if he's fit, you start him on a wing, I think.
Fair enough. And through weighted numbers, you can rotate, you know, those players through there. Like Zach Fisher can push up onto a wing. Sure. I've really liked Harry Sheasel and the first year player, Colby McKercher. He looks like he's got a lethal left foot and can break a line, can't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and he'll get used to what he can and can't pull off at AFL level. There was a couple of times early on against Collingwood where he was a bit overly ambitious and hit kicks that would have come off it in the juniors, you know, no worries, but there's just that extra sort of half step or a full step that AFL defenders can cover that the juniors can't. So he'll learn that, but the weight on the kicks, and you can tell that a lot of younger players, when they kick or when they handball, it's just, you know, first thing they see, and there's not as much of a thought put into it, but you can tell exactly what McKercher wants to do with every disposal. Whether it comes off, you know, it's not always going to come off. He's not going to go through a whole season with zero turnovers. But you can see the process behind everything he wants to do. So I think that's probably the most impressive part from a first-year player who's still yet to debut.
Yeah, definitely. We don't want to get too carried away with him, but he has looked really, really good in intra-club matches. And obviously last week he had 25 touches and really linked up pretty well with Harry Sheasel and Zach Fisher. And this sort of football will definitely suit his skill set. Midfield, Ricky, we've had great pre-seasons from LDU, Wardlaw, Lazaro and Tom Powell. Where do you think this leaves Will Phillips?
If I was picking round one, he's not in the 22 for me. Potentially a sub, maybe. No, not in the 22 for me, which is just how it goes. How do you displace those guys? And While I'm not convinced 100% yet on Lazaro, you have to reward form, right? And you're not setting the right example for players if you talk about how good Lazaro has been all preseason, like we've heard in basically every second interview from a coach or a player. They've all been pumping him up, so you have to reward him. So I just don't think it leaves room for Phillips to start the year anyway.
With Lazaro, have you been surprised by his development in the last 12 months? If you told me this time last year that he was going to be a player he is today, I would have laughed at you. He has come a long way, hasn't he?
Yeah, I'd narrow it down from 12 months to 3 months, really, the preseason. To be honest. You can always see some players, you know, they do kind of what they have to do, and then there are some players that, you know, if they don't make it as an AFL player, it's going to be through no fault of their own, right? They've done everything they possibly can, and you can see the work that Lazaro puts in every single preseason. So you can see that's a measure of his character. I guess the good part about the last couple of years that he's been thrown around in kind of every position in the book is that he can start in that sort of high half forward role and push up to a midfielder. I know I mentioned in the Shinbone piece against Collingwood that looks like it's going to be largely Simpkins' role, but that Lazaro can do that as well when Simpkins are either on ball or having a rest. So that gives a bit more flexibility with the midfield rotations as well, considering Phillips is very much just an inside midfielder at this stage.
Yeah, is the midfield the big strength of the team as far as quality and depth goes at this club?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. And that's even once Thomas has been taken out of the equation. So, that's clearly what the goal has been in over recent regimes, although there's been a few of them over the last few years, to build sort of from the midfield and then out from there. So, as long as the injury list looks okay, but that's definitely going to – the midfield's going to win a couple of games by itself this year.
That sounds promising. Now, we signed Tyler Sells last week to help in the key forward spot, Ricky. Are you confident CCJ can be that second forward to help Nick Larkey based on what you've seen in pre-season?
Oh, well, it's just thankful that he's playing. Those concussion symptoms took a while to reports took a while to sort of be finally shaken off, and I hope that doesn't mean he's kind of in a situation where, because that one took so long, he might be one knock away from further damage, but I'm far from an expert from that, so I'll leave that to the people who know. It looks like he's going to get a chance to start. So, he hasn't been, he's shown glimpses at best over the last sort of couple of years, but hopefully now that the preseason has been relatively uneventful, once he's got back on the bark and you can see the starting of a system that should help really everyone offensively. So, he plays, 20% ruck and the rest of the time forward, he's going to get a shot. If we're being honest, I'm not convinced yet, but we get the shot and good luck to him.
I think, you definitely get the opportunity early, but it's good that we've got another prospect in Tyler Sells that can challenge for his spot a little bit, because he was very good in the reserves last year and looked good in the intra-club matches and thoroughly deserves his spot on the list. Now, small forwards. Now, we've seen Blake Drury, a little bit of Robert Hanson. Now, they're probably the two genuine small forwards under 180 centimetres on the list. Do you think either one of those players will get a game this year?
They'll definitely get games this year at some point, unless they're injured, which, fingers crossed, doesn't happen. The injury part of it. By the sounds of it, it looks like Cooper, it's going to be between Harvey and Drury for that first, I guess, that remaining sort of spot in the forward line rotations. If you have sort of Larkey, Coleman, Jones, and then sort of Zerha, Stevenson, and then sort of that extra mid, and it's just it's much like sort of previous years. I think it's been a common lament trying to figure out who can provide that pressure. So, between sort of Larkey, Coleman, Jones, Curtis, Zerha, Stevenson as your five sort of permanent forwards, and then sort of that, then you got a sixth forward waiting. And this looks, Harvey's not a traditional small forward, but I think it was Greenwood or maybe McDonald on the intra-club stream, potentially both of them, saying that that's been a big focus of Harvey's to sort of increase that pressure. So I think it'll be between Harvey and Drury for round one, and then Hansen coming together. It looks like he's made some strides after last year, where he was kind of dropped into the situation where he was far from ready to be at AFL level, which is, again, like, perfectly understandable given the situation. So he looks like he's made progress as well. So, we'll see that develop over the year.
Well, we've got Paul Curtis, Cameron Zerr. You named a number of forwards. There's very exciting talent there. There's potential to put up some big scores with the way we're going to play, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. There is if that ball use sort of isn't restricted by opposition defenses. Anyway, that's not the best. It's not the best opposition to start with, having to go to the Giants. But there's definitely the potential. It's just a matter of making sure it doesn't bounce back out of there twice as quick, and I'm trying to lock it in that forward half, which has historically been a struggle for the last few years.
Yeah, you're obviously very high on the Giants in round one. So you think they'll back up last year, that it wasn't just an aberration, they hit a purple patch in the second half of the year? And because the first half of the year, I think they started 3-7, 3-8, and I thought they were rebuilding. But you think they're a genuine premiership threat this year?
Yeah. I mean, but with the normal caveat about injuries and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, even in that first half of the year, they were losing a lot, but the process was really good and they weren't getting blown out of the water. Apart from the game against Collingwood Mother's Day, potentially, that was the only game they lost by more than sort of 3 or 4 goals up until, I think it was a game late in the season, I think potentially against Port Adelaide, potentially. But yeah, I mean, that 3-7 run, there were a lot of close losses and the process was good. So, and then when they started getting better at what Kingsley wanted them to do, and then it all clicked, and obviously they had, you know, their fair share of luck. They had a few close wins along the way, but I just think what they do is repeatable, and it's a really good list, and most importantly, a really good coach.
Well, it definitely looks like it, and it's going to be a big challenge round one. Just on that, how do you think we'll go in that round one? I know it's early. There's still a couple weeks to go, and there could be injuries and suspensions or so forth. How do you think we're shaping up to face them in round one this year? Did you want someone else other than them?
Yeah. I'll take about 14 other teams rather than the Giants. I mean, I think for a team in North's point of view, I mean, people going up there expecting a win is probably... I would like a glass of that optimism. I don't think that one's going to happen, but from week to week, obviously with North, there'll be sort of 6 to 8 games you really circle on the fixtures. Oh, hey, these are wins or potential wins. And the rest of them, you just want to see the process really and see how that carries over, especially round one. Because there's always a bit of that unknown of what in the preseason carries over to round one. And I think, that's going to be the big one.
Definitely. Now, I want to talk just a couple more players before get some predictions off you. Before the season starts, predictions. Jai Simpkin. Now, you mentioned him in the article, playing a high half forward, basically as an extra midfielder. Do you like that role for him?
Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah, I really do. I think it's a way to solve that sort of eventual midfield depth problem before it becomes a crunch, really. And we know he started his career as a small forward, and he has those forward instincts as well. So it's not like sort of midfielders that get pushed out to a half forward and then can't actually contribute as a forward. We know Simpkin can contribute closer to goal as well. So I really like it. I know we talked a couple of times last year about how he was sort of flying under the radar with his games. Ended up being a pretty injury interrupted year for him. And even now tear a tendon in his finger the other day. So hopefully that doesn't sort of affect the way he can hit the ground running and his touch and his feel around the ball. But I really like that role for him. And I think it's going to work well.
Do you think him and Tom Power could rotate that role during the course of a game? Or do you think that's just his role and he's alone?
I think, I mean, by the looks of it, I mean, I could be sort of jumping the gun here. It looks like a mainly Simpkin. And I think Lazaro will be that sort of also playing a little bit of that role as well. And a little bit of Power, but like kind of as the third string in that sort of high half forward role. But I would imagine mainly Simpkin and a bit of Lazaro based on how the year started, both in the intra club and the Collingwood game.
Very good. Now, there's a lot of people that are a little bit critical of this last player I'm going to name to you, and they see it as a bit of a weakness in the team now since Todd Goldstein has left. Are you high on Tristan Sherry to be the number one ruckman this year, Ricky?
Well, I don't think there's much of a choice, is there? There's probably the number one ruckman on the list. No.
Unless you're high on Hamish Free.
Yes, well, he's got a long way to go considering how interrupted his first year was. Look, I mean, to go back a step, my theory has always been you don't have to invest a lot in your ruckman unless you luck into a generational one like Todd Goldstein was, you know, like Melbourne with Max Gawn, that sort of stuff. And I think, like with Sherry, he fits the bill. Like, he's solid, he'll do the job, happy to throw his weight around. Doesn't look like he's going to get sort of carved from pillar to post. And by the looks of early season output, looks like he's really improved his ability to cover the ground as well. Like, he's never going to be the beast athletes that are going to run all day and play 90% game time. But as long as it's a sort of solid ruckman who isn't getting constantly beaten, I think that's perfect, and that's all you need, especially with the midfield that North is developing eventually. So that big body, protect people, and I think it'd be fine.
I mean, I guess at the end of the day, besides Max Gawn, you know, last 5 or 6 years, the premiership ruckman, they've probably, you know, been average ruckman, haven't they, really?
Yeah, which isn't obviously a slight on those ruckmen, but just they're not the top tier of ruckman elite. And that's just the truth of it. And it's not to say they're bad ruckmen. They fill their role without being sort of game changers like other positions on the field. And by the looks of it, that's what Sherry is going to be, and it's probably might take a little bit of adjustment from supporters, considering we've been used to watching just really, really good ruckman, even pre-Goldie as well. So a bit of an adjustment to make in the expectations, but I think he'll fill his role, and for what that role is, he'll fill it well.
Well, I can't remember the last ruckman before Todd Goldstein. It might have been Hamish McIntosh, and that's what in the mid.
And, yeah, and H was a good ruckman as well. So
he was.
I mean, that's almost been a tradition in North's history. It's been consistently good ruckman for a long time. But obviously Goldie is at in my view anyways, at the top of that tree. So bit of a different approach from in 2024, but yeah, it'd be fun.
That's right. And he will get every opportunity. All right, Ricky, I want to get some predictions off you before I let you go. How many games will we win this year?
I'm hoping for 6 or 7. That'd be nice. 3 wins last year, double that, 6 or 7. 6 or 7 and then a couple more closer losses would be ideal. Obviously, in a dream world, they win 10, but I'm not sure that one's going to happen. But, that's if they win sort of 6 or 7 and then don't get completely blown out in sort of 8 or 9 games, and then sort of consistent progress especially with this offensive part of the game style, along with hopefully one of those sort of Pink or Dawson, Comben, Nguyen quartet really pops as a key defender for the next few years. So I think before that happens, it's a really good year.
Oh, it's a bit pessimistic, I think, Ricky, considering we beat the reigning premiers convincingly. So, I think 6 would be a good baseline sort of to aim for. And like you said, a lot more competitive games. I think we were a lot more competitive in the second half of the year last year. We lost a lot of games, probably 2 or 3 goals or less. So, nothing wrong with that. How many goals will Nick Larkey get this year?
What was it last year? 71?
Yeah.
71. Mm-hmm. If he plays, 23 games, I did a nice little tweet thread about this at the end of last season, just because he got targeted so much. And these numbers are off the top of my head, so I hope they're still right. But he got targeted with roughly 38% of North's inside 50 entries. And mm-hmm. the next most in the league was Curnow on 31%. And that's like, it's hard to say like how much of a massive difference that is over the course of a full year to be about sort of 6-7% up on the second best in the entire league. So, I mean, in an ideal world, we sort of watch and see a forward line with multiple different options, and that way the ones that do still get to, like, he has more space to work in instead of being double and triple teamed at times. I think if that happens with sort of a more varied forward line, he'll kick fewer goals but have sort of a more impactful year. So, I mean, with how accurate he is on goals, I mean, he probably only needs sort of 90 shots on goal to get 60, right? And 90 shots on goal in 23 games is only four-ish per game. And I think that's more than achievable for the way he converts.
So do you think we have to, obviously 38% is the most targeted forward in the competition. Do you think we need to drop that this year a little bit?
Well, I think, yeah, I do. I mean, whether the only issue is whether the personnel allows it, right? Mm. It's all well and good saying we need to have more varied forward line, but you can't keep going to people who aren't going to contribute, right? So that's kind of the balancing act that you want to pull. And you know, in an ideal world, you end up with a forward line where sort of three or four guys you can go to and be threatening it every time. But I mean, as it stands right now, Lucky is the only consistent threatening option. So you'd be mad not to go to him as much as you do, right? So it's really tricky to get that correct balance and be threatening when you're going forward and also keeping those long-term goals in mind. So, I mean, I'm not saying, so no one gets the wrong idea, I'm not saying he should be sort of second banana or third banana. He's obviously the best forward on, at the club by a long, long way, and he should be treated as such. But it's just a little bit of a slight reduction if that means you can make a couple more forwards a little bit more damaging, that'd be huge from a long-term point of view.
Yeah, Cameron Tavares and Paul Curtis might be beneficiaries of quick ball movement. And if Nick Larkey isn't targeted as much, if he goes down to like a Charlie Curnow, 30-31%, then you'll probably see players like Zerha and Curtis be the beneficiaries of that. And they might go up a little bit more in their percentages. Who will win our BNF this year?
I will say Davies Uniacke.
I think everyone said that. As long as he stays fit, I think that's the only question, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I mean, to me, he's the best player on the list. So best player on the list, play the season, he'll win the best and fairest. So
it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And last one, this is probably a little bit of an easy one, best first-year player.
It has to be McKercher, doesn't it? I am looking for, I think, although Dersimer is going to be a bit of a slower burn, which seems a little bit odd to say for such a high pick, I am looking forward to seeing how he develops. There's definitely something there, but really, really interested to see how that sort of translates and whether he gets thrown in at AFL level or whether it's kind of, you know, learn your craft at VFL level for the first sort of, you know, for the first few weeks and see where it goes from there. So, I mean, as strange as it sounds, although I think the coach is going to be amazing, I'm almost more interested to watch how Dersimer develops. So that'll be an interesting storyline this season.
Definitely. I mean, we do have a lot of depth at that sort of position with Zane Dersimer. We've got a lot of half forwards, so it's going to be touch and go whether he plays round one, isn't it? Because he did miss last week. I assume he's back against St Kilda this week. It was just a minor thing last week, so it's going to be touch and go whether he gets in for the first few rounds, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't have my best 23 in front of me, but I did it a couple of days ago and I didn't have him in for round one. So, and again, that's not the end of the world. In a way, it's almost good to lower expectations a bit, depending on, I mean, I don't know him for a bar of soap. So, you know, some players that'll help them and sort of go at their own pace, and other players want to be thrown in at the deep end. And sort of as it goes, we'll learn more about him from week to week.
Definitely will. I mean, I see a lot of people already saying that we should have drafted Riley Sanders ahead of Zane Dersimer, which is a big call this early as well. And mind you, we have about 1,000 midfielders on the list, so yeah, it wouldn't have made too much sense. Well, Ricky, that's all I have for you. Any final messages for all your loyal servants out there?
They're definitely not loyal servants, but all these sorts of musings are on my Twitter at RickM18, or go subscribe to the Shinboner Patreon at patreon.com/theshinboner. But apart from that, that's about it from me.
Sounds good, Ricky. And make sure to check out his work at theshinbone.com. It's great stuff. And if you want to be a smarter supporter, then definitely get behind his work. Well, Ricky, I really appreciate you coming on. I know you're a very busy man. You have been for a number of months now. So it was really good to get your thoughts and always a bit of a season preview. I'm sure I'll chat to you throughout the course of the year. Thanks so much for coming on.
No worries. Always a fun time. Thanks for having me.
So thank you very much to Ricky for coming on the show once again. I will try and get him on the show throughout the course of the year when I can and when he is available. So once again, thanks to all you lovely listeners for all the likes, retweets, and comments you all put out for the show. It is much appreciated. I'm glad you tell your friends about it. That seems to be the best way for people to find out about the show. The listens, or the downloads, I should say, have been through the roof lately. So it's gone to new records, especially when I've had Siobhan and Jesse on. So, yeah, it seems like you Labor listeners really enjoy their perspective. And why not? They're very knowledgeable North supporters. So at this stage, I'll probably be back next week. Unfortunately, I am going away for a few days, going on a cruise. So I won't be back till early next week. So I'll have a couple episodes there. I'll try and get some people on and get some knowledgeable people on like I usually do. And we'll go through a little bit of a chat about that. There might be three episodes next week. I'm not too sure at this stage. Anyways, thank you very much to all you listeners for everything you do to help out the show. And that's it. So bye for now and go Roos.